Well,
tagged your car?
She used her power to burn "Mother is watching" on the hood of our vehicle.
Damn. Okay, I'll tell you what I know. First, what did Veronique already tell you?
That she trained with Dorian.
I see. And that was a few years back. So Dorian has learned a couple of new powers since then. They're remarkable, really.
Like, time is of the essence here, Ken. And no, time wasn't of the essence, but I wanted him to speak quickly so he didn't have time to consider what he was telling me.
She can teleport. That's one thing Veronique probably didn't know.
I activated the Bluetooth and put Ken on speakerphone. Say that again.
She can teleport.
I watched in the rearview mirror as realization flared in Veronique's eyes. Okay, that explains some things. How is she finding us?
It's the craziest thing. She developed this unique ability of premonition that's tied to her art skills.
What are you saying?
She can draw primitive pictures of another location, focus on it, and teleport to that location. She only has to get a few of the details right for it to work. Look, you'd be stupid to think Merc Secure and the FCG aren't tracking your every move. They know,
Ken whispered.
And they know about your vehicle switching. But they can't ever catch you in time. That's clear. So congrats there.
Thanks, but that still doesn't explain how she was so precise.
I'll get to that in a moment. Whoever you are, Gideon Caldwell, you've managed to avoid detection in an era when most data is readily available. I mean, like I said, you've made mistakes, but the fact that you're constantly on the move has made it hard to track you. It's remarkable, really, but they are following your trail, always about a day behind.
Cut to the chase, I told him as the Ford slowed on its own to change lanes. How did she find us?
Dorian has been tasked with finding you.
I fucking know that, Ken. Wait, who tasked her? Mother? Fuck, I need to understand the hierarchy of what's going on here. The ladies haven't been so forthcoming. Damn it, Ken, I'm hanging up, I said, panicking again.
Don't hang up! To answer your question, I don't have much to say about the person you call Mother. But if it helps you to understand, yes, she's been tasked to get you by Mother. Dorian knows your general location, and she's able to sketch where she thinks you might be.
So she could attack us any time?
Yes.
Thanks, Ken. I rolled down the window and tossed the phone out. Then I asked Grace for my smartphone and immediately rerouted us a different way. No hotels tonight, I told them.
Where are we going to stay?
Grace looked over her shoulder.
There's room in this car, but maybe it isn't large enough.
Let's call it a makeshift Airbnb. Dorian is expecting us to stay in a hotel, and she's tracking us somehow. Shit. I shouldn't have tossed the phone out the window. Veronique laughed. Yeah, sorry. That was stupid. We'll talk to Ken later. Anyway, sorry, thinking out loud here. Maybe she has a Cerebro type of thing.
A what?
Veronique asked. Grace nodded as she quickly sifted through my thoughts. Never mind. And sorry for relating everything to X-Men. I'm just used to thinking of superheroes and mutants through that medium.
We aren't mutants,
Veronique said.
Technically we are,
Grace said.
Our powers are from exploited mutations.
Either way, we have to do things that Dorian isn't anticipating. She expects us to stay at a hotel. Once these points line up, she'll find us. So now we do things a little more unexpected, and we keep on high alert. Dorian could appear at any time.
We should change cars again, just in case she saw us get into this vehicle.
Good call. We'll get something at the next rest stop, I see. We have to keep her guessing. Chapter 6. Writing, crawfish, and a visit to the local strip club. We switched our cars somewhere near Vicksburg, Mississippi. We now had a Nissan Altima with the black leather seats and a sunroof. Or was it a moonroof? There was no telling, but it was a nice day outside, so we decided to open it. Grace had eased up some, but Veronique seemed like she was still on high alert. I put the car into auto drive and finally called Luke on Google Face. You there?
Hey!
He was sitting in front of his computer. I could tell because of the glare on his glasses. He stood and a cat jumped off his lap.
Where have you been?
He asked, concern and kindness in his eyes.
I haven't heard from you in a day or so.
It's been a pretty crazy 24 hours.
Tell me about it,
he said as he moved to a chair by a window. I saw him lock eyes with Veronique in the back seat and wave.
Hi,
was all she said before shifting to the other side so she wouldn't be in the video. What came out of my mouth next was word salad, but Luke was able to parse through it and get an understanding of what had happened.
Are you serious? There's another one? And she's after you now, too?
Everyone is after me.
I'm so glad I'm in Canada.
What? You think they can't get you in Canada?
If they ever asked, I'd say I was a fan who offers good advice. I'm not worried about them coming up here. If I were in a different country, yeah, maybe, but the American government plays nice with Canada.
You're kind of like our cute little brother.
You're kind of like our bully bigger brother.
We both laughed.
Okay, the gamer in me has to ask. Have you had a chance to play with their stats any?
Not as much as I'd like, although I hesitated to tell Luke about Ken Kim, but figured I should put all my cards on the table, especially since he had given me good advice before. So I gave him another long story short version of Ken Kim and David Butler in Austin. Worry creased his brow as he frowned.
I don't know if I'd trust anyone if I were you, aside from any writer friends you may have in Canada.
I probably should have just come up to Canada.
We'd love to have you, and it'd be harder for them to get you.
To further answer your question about playing with their stats, Ken gave me a code that he says will upgrade their abilities. He didn't say which abilities, and I'm afraid to put the code in. I don't know if we're being tracked. And to tell you the truth, just thinking about it gets me biting my nails and looking over my shoulder. It's not healthy.
I can't imagine what I would do if I felt my government and a private security company were after me. And this new one, Dorian Gray, huh? She paints energy into existence, and it solidifies and can attack you? What in the actual hell? And she can teleport and has a premonition ability, too?
Stranger than fiction, right? He shrugged.
I don't know what to make of it. I mean, I'd love to tell some of our mutual friends, but this story...
No, don't tell anyone. They can read my book if they want to know the truth. I'm already paranoid as hell. I don't want to be dealing with a bunch of people asking me questions, nor do I want to defend myself to other authors.
There are hungry wolves watching, always. I wouldn't be surprised if someone published a book like Mutants in the next few weeks. People see the sales rankings, an open market, and they dive in. Considering that your book is the only one in the creative nonfiction gamer sci-fi genre, and that combining sci-fi with creative nonfiction is a big seller, I bet good money someone will try to tap your market. Soon, too.
Let them try, I said, thinking of the second installment. The second book will be out shortly, and it turns everything up a notch.
I'll bet. Send me a copy ASAP, and good luck.
It took us about another hour and a half to get to Shreveport, Louisiana. The only thing I could recall from the drive was a shit ton of billboards using retired sports celebrities to advertise casinos. The roads here were terrible, crumbled, filled with potholes, and faded by the sun. Because of the fact I was surrounded by super-powered females, it didn't matter if we stayed in the good or bad part of town. But since we were living the high life, we drove around until we found a pretty nice neighborhood and a large two-story home. It had a modern touch, with a wall of windows that faced to the east, protected from the neighbor's prying eyes by a willow tree. There was a touch of old in the house as well, from the swing set out front to the stones that were used to make the walkway. It would be a nice place to stay, at least for a night. As we got out of the car and I went to the back to get our bags, Veronique touched me on the arm. I spun to her a little too quickly, the fear at the back of my mind that she wanted to feed always present. What's up? I asked, regaining my composure.
I need to feed tonight.
I was about to say, you just fed yesterday, but decided not to push those buttons. Besides, She was the only thing that may save us from Dorian if we were attacked by the killer artist anytime soon. Veronique needed to be well fed. I rubbed my hands together. Fine, we'll need to decide on a place. The idea of a strip club came to me, and I was just about to toss it aside when Grace told me it was a good idea. I smirked at her. Do you really know every single thought I have?
Who says you're the one having the thoughts? I've never visited a strip club,
she said as she moved toward the house. There were two cars parked in the driveway, so we figured someone was home. Now, back in her brunette and athletic gear look, Grace knocked on the door, and after about a minute, a middle-aged woman greeted us. She wore a low-cut top, jeans with decorative sparkles, and her gray and brown hair was pulled into a loose ponytail. She may have been younger than she looked, but her skin had been severely violated by the southern sun, so it was hard to tell. As Grace's eyes flashed white, I instructed the woman to take her family, wherever they happened to be, and go to a casino in Lake Charles for the night. I gave her $3,000 and told her to have a great time. She let us in, packed a bag, and left the house to us. It was a nice place inside, too. Spacious, with plenty of furniture, nicely carved wooden decorations, and several rooms upstairs. Even if we figured out what to do with Dorian and stopped her from predicting where we would go, staying in nice homes was definitely the way of the future. Grace and Veronique seemed to like it as well. They walked around the place, commenting on what they would do if they owned it, and ended up hanging out for the rest of the afternoon while I worked. At some point, Grace made lemonade, or possibly the lemonade was already made, and the two chilled in the backyard by a pool, sipping from ice-cold glasses. Luckies. It was strange to think this was probably the most they'd ever relaxed in their lives. I mean, sure, Grace could relax in her solitary confinement back at the Rose Lyle facility, but I wouldn't exactly call that relaxing, even if she had picked up meditation or yoga or some other spiritual practice. I was glad to see them at ease, and I would have joined them if I didn't have some work to do. Alas, the work of a writer never ends, because no writer ever feels as if they're done. Also, no writer should use the word alas and take themselves seriously. Regardless of my verbiage, I could finish a million-word manuscript and be itching to start the next one, even though I had no idea what I was going to write about. There's something almost painful about an empty page, something that makes a writer want to fill it. And even a page full of words won't appease all readers. As Stephen King once said, "You can't please all the readers all the time. You can't please even some of the readers all the time, but you really ought to please at least some of the readers some of the time." I think William Shakespeare said that. Or Bob Dylan. Even now, looking back at all this, and having written everything that I could about the experiments, I still feel there's more to say. I still feel that I can uncover the truth, however small the truth nugget may be. Digging a little deeper and filling an empty page hardly satiates, but it does scratch that itch. Besides, any writer will tell you that what they do is a sickness. Writing is an incredible malaise that sweeps over you, a flaming carrot on a stick, a tree falling in a forest that no one hears but your demented ass. Hopefully, whatever your sickness is becomes contagious. Of course, I didn't write any of this while sitting in the study of our nice Airbnb. I was focused on trying to add as many words as I could to Mutants in the Making Part 2, beefing up the manuscript as best I could. There was a lot to cover, from what happened at the Rose Lyle facility to Dorian's appearance. Since it was creative nonfiction with a sci-fi gamer twist, I didn't need to have the build-ups and foreshadowing that I would have put in a fictional title. As fun and harrowing as it was to relive all the shit I'd been through, a writer's work can be boring, and it took me 4 hours to get down about 7,000 words. There were a few bathroom breaks in between, an occasional jaunt over to the window to check on Grace and Veronique by the pool, a glass of lemonade, and a 10-minute stretch in which I questioned my writing ability. I also had to clean my glasses a few times. Damn things kept fogging up. As one does when they are experiencing success, I checked my sales numbers frequently. They were looking good. Damn good, actually, And the time to get the second installment out was hot. The reviews weren't too shabby either. Most were 4 or 5 stars, an occasional 3 stars, and 1% were 1 star. Again, not bad. And fuck the haters. Anyone hungry? I asked as I opened the sliding glass door to the backyard. Veronique, who was relaxed on a lounge chair, slowly raised her hand. We'll feed you later. Sorry, that came out weird. She shrugged.
No, makes sense.
I'd eat something, Ryder Gideon.
Grace approached me in a tight 2-piece bathing suit. It was something straight out of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition. With just a small amount of fabric stretched across her breasts and a nearly non-existent bikini bottom.
Too much?
She asked, her face turning red. I laughed. To eat Cajun food? Yes. To go to a strip club later so Veronique can feed? No. She morphed into a jean jacket, a low-cut blouse, and tight jeans. The final touch was a pair of cowboy boots, embroidered with Dia de los Muertos skulls. Where did you hear about cowboy boots?
I didn't hear. I saw. We looked in the owner's closet. She has some very cool stuff. Very fashionable.
Veronique nodded.
I will get a pair in the future.
What is it about cowboy boots that you like exactly? I asked, trying not to grin like an idiot at the two. They were adorable, and at least one of them knew it. Grace shrugged as she tried out the pair, walking toward me, stopping just as she reached me, then turning away and looking at me over her shoulder.
They're sexy, right?
I ran my hand down my beard. Sure. I took my smartphone out, Google-faced good Cajun places, and found one about 3 miles away. It was a quick drive, and as we pulled into the parking lot, I figured now would be as good a time as any to get another vehicle. Goodbye, Altima. Hello, Nissan Rogue. It was the newest one, too. The plate still a paper tag. The guy driving it, a man in a ball cap with a fishing hook on the bill, waved at us as he drove away in the Altima. The people in the South were definitely friendly.
Describe this Cajun food to me,
Grace said as we entered the restaurant. It was small and smoky inside, the tables made of wood, a stuffed alligator hanging on the wall.
It smells very spicy and fishy in here.
That is an accurate description. Let's have an interesting dinner. Just trust me on this.
Welcome,
cried a red-faced woman with a waist like Santa. She sat on a stool, and rather than take us to our seat, she pointed a Vienna sausage finger at the booths in the back.
You and your pretty friends can sit right back there.
Thanks, I said. We went in the direction she'd indicated and found a clean table with a roll of paper towels on it. Veronique squeezed in next to me, and Grace sat across from us. The menus came, and our waiter, a light-skinned black man with hazel eyes and freckles, complimented Grace on her jean jacket before leaving to bring us water. Let's see. I found the po' boys on the menu and placed an order for 2, as well as 3 pounds of crawfish. Veronique lightly sipped from her water as I explained to Grace how the states in America were different, very different, and how Louisiana was pretty much nothing like Connecticut. Yet we were all united under the guidelines set forth by the FCG, the Federal Corporate Government, which had a rotating cast of yearly sponsors that were allowed to showcase their logos on government documents. A win for everyone.
They talk different,
Grace said, starting to morph into our waiter. Her skin folded from the center point in her face, and I was just barely able to remind her of one of our cardinal rules. No shifting in public.
Sorry,
she said as her form flickered back into place. I glanced around. No one had seen her transform. The food came, and the girls watched me curiously as I showed them how to eat a crawfish, which began with pulling its head off, squeezing the meat out, and working my ass off to just get a little sliver of protein. Grace wasn't buying it, so she stuck to the greasy po' boy and the simmering potatoes, sausage, and spice-covered corn that came with the crawfish.
I didn't know a human could fill themselves up on water bugs,
Grace said as I attempted to eat my weight in crawfish.
It's very unattractive,
Veronique added. It tastes better than it looks, I said, and bit into the corn. Strip clubs. I'd only been about 3 times, all when I was in college at Southern Connecticut State. I had a roommate who was into making it rain. I didn't know this was a thing, but apparently it was, and he loved cashing out a $100 bill into ones and tossing the money at the woman dancing on the pole. I guess that's what happens when rap videos raise our youth. While I was definitely in a position to make it rain, our goal at the titty bar was to let Veronique feed. We purposefully chose the shadiest-looking one I could find with the lowest reviews on Yelp. I wanted something sketchy, dark, and a place where people wouldn't go asking questions. Full exposure fit that bill, especially with the review that read, "I was stabbed here 2 times. The fact that I came back after the first stabbing tells you just how badass this place be. #3 strikes and you out. #humble. Prayer symbol." I put on my bulletproof vest after reading that, just in case things got out of hand. The doorman came under Grace's spell as we approached. He was a big Mexican guy with 2 tear tattoos. I still needed to get me one of those. Kidding. And in a matter of seconds, his eyes flashed white. Hell, he even let us in without taking the door tax, saving me $30. Not bad. Like most strip clubs, full exposure was shadowy and cavernous, the poles and stages set up like little beacons of light to call in the creatures of the dark. A circular bar took up the center of the space, and the walls were lined with sofas for lap dances. There were a few VIP sections, and I figured it would be best if we went there first, just to get our bearings and separate us from the masses. The music was loud, the bass rattling my bones, and there were 5 or 6 dancers working. The stripper on the center stage, a pale white woman with tattoos all over her thighs and ass, was bent in front of the shiny metal pole, her rear to the audience. Another, on a stage not far away, was twerking while a couple of black dudes made it rain, each of them with a stack of bills. Twerking was awesome to watch. It stirred something primitive in me. I was distracted for a moment as the woman did her thing, dollar bills slapping against her back. Veronique touched my arm and I glanced back at the two of them. VIP, I told Grace, which she relayed to the first waitress who approached us. The waitress wore a New Orleans Saints t-shirt tied at the front and boys' shorts. The dimples on her ass bounced as she led us to one of the VIP areas, which was demarcated by a red rope. If you're thinking I've never had VIP service before, you're right. I felt like $1 million, like a Trump heir holding court over the masses below. As soon as we took our seats, a man in a black suit stepped in front of our VIP area and crossed his hands behind his back. Our protection. Shit, I almost wanted someone to try something just to see him in action. Still, we needed to be in complete control. "Take his mind, just in case," I whispered to Grace. She nodded, approached the man, and placed her hand on his arm. That was all it took. We now had our very own beefy, shaved-head security guard. Not 2 minutes later, the waitress returned with a bottle of vodka, courtesy of a man sitting alone in another VIP area. "Is he drunk?" I asked Grace as she looked over at him. He wore a leather vest, a leather hat with silver buckles on it, and had an unlit cigar in his mouth.
"No, but there is something else wrong with him."
"Something else?" The flashing lights, darkness, and abundance of naked women only reminded me of just how odd a strip club was. What would it be like with the lights up? What would it be like without the music? Grace nodded.
"He is another kind of drunk."
"Drugs." Veronique didn't quite lick her lips, but she did look around with hunger in her eyes.
"When can I begin?"
"We have to make sure the person isn't drunk, which is a mistake on my part because it's a damn strip club and everyone's drunk." I thought for a moment as Grace opened the bottle of vodka. "You're not gonna like that," I told her.
"It's for you,"
she said with a smile as she poured a glass. She handed it to me, and out of courtesy, I cheersed the man who'd bought us the bottle. "Please don't come over. Please don't come over," I thought as I returned my attention to Veronique. She wasn't at all fazed by the strip club. Grace, on the other hand, looked around with excitement and curiosity on her face. "Remember, no shifting," I thought to her.
"I know, Writer Gideon. I'm getting ideas for later."
"Later?" I mouthed as she locked eyes with me.
Need I exaggerate?
If ever there was a time to take a shot, it was to that last statement. I finished the shot, wincing as it burned its way down my throat. A strip club was a bad idea. I knew it after Grace couldn't locate anyone who wasn't intoxicated in some way. I knew it when the cigar man who bought us the bottle invited himself over to our table. We'll have better luck just walking around outside, I told Veronique, who eyed the drugged-out man with malicious intent. As he spoke, his words tumbling out of his mouth and quickly being consumed by the loud bass, Veronique moved closer to him. Grace, I started to say, but the shifter was watching a pregnant lady dance on the center stage. Did not expect to see that, I thought. We need to go, I said, getting to my feet. The last thing I needed was Veronique on whatever that guy was on. She had already placed her hand on his arm, but quickly let go.
Fine,
she said, and stood as well. You can feed soon, I told her. Let's just look for something outside. Chapter 7. Surprise Visit. Have everyone return to their food and drinks, I told Grace as we entered the McStarbucks near our borrowed abode. It was the first thought that came to mind, and yes, it was devious, but Veronique needed to feed. And what better place than America's favorite restaurant coffee peddler to find people? I don't want anyone to know we were here. I glanced at the ceiling and found a few small spherical cameras. Veronique? She followed my gaze, and the metal inside each camera was stripped from its socket, disabling any chance for us to be on film. Aside from when we entered. The vodka definitely had me feeling a little more daring than normal. I told Grace to find 5 people who weren't intoxicated and tell them to sit against the wall. 5 people stood, walked to the wall, and sat, the expressions on their faces completely blank.
Thank you,
Veronique said as she approached. She didn't kill them, but similar to someone donating too much blood, the people didn't look very good after she finished. Their skin had shriveled up and tightened. Their eyes had sunk into their faces and veins had appeared on their arms and legs. The last person Veronique stepped in front of twitched, her throat tightening convulsively. For a brief second, I thought the woman knew, but the look of realization was gone in a flash. Innocent bystanders, I told myself.
Veronique needs to feed,
Grace reminded me.
They'll be okay.
I shook my head as the rest of the people in the restaurant sat or stood without moving a muscle, almost as if Grace had frozen time.
Focus on the good things,
a voice said in my head. Grace's thoughts or mine? Who knew? So, I did what anyone in a depraved situation should do. I waited until we were out of the McStarbucks and switched my thought pattern, manually. Think of something else. I was expecting to get a good night's sleep after a little one-on-one time with Grace. She'd already hinted at that. At least there was something to look forward to, something to wash the gruesome McStarbucks scene out of my head. When in doubt, think about sex. I settled into my seat, started up the car, and drove away, confident that I could get us home despite being a little drunk. Something flashed in the rearview mirror. Dorian Gray was sitting in the back seat next to Veronique. Shit! I said as Dorian quickly drew a small sphere of purple energy and disappeared. The sphere exploded. I swerved into a street lamp, the airbag deploying instantly. My world became a series of red flashes and traumatic vignettes of my own death. My face was powdered by the airbag. I touched the back of my head. It was sticky with blood from the minor explosion. What the... The Nissan's lights were flashing. The horn was blaring. An exclamation point on the dash was blinking and doing somersaults. I sucked in a breath of air. Grace's hands were pressed around my face.
Gideon!
She yelled, or better, she mouthed, as my ears were still ringing from the explosion. Once she saw I wasn't responding, she kicked open her door and came around to my side to help me out. Where? I started to ask. I saw the blood in Grace's hair and choked up.
I'm fine. Stay with me.
The door opened and I stumbled to the ground, nearly cracking my head on the pavement. I pushed myself up to find Grace standing near me on high alert.
"Where's Veronique?"
I said, dizzy as I looked left and right. I heard metal tear from the Nissan and knew Veronique wasn't far away. The metal surrounded us, forming a protective barrier comprised of bolts, lug nuts, and other assorted tidbits stripped from the vicinity, including the panels of a mailbox and a couple of aluminum cans. Dorian stood on top of a nearby parked car, her paintbrush moving from her mouth to the open air as she drew an 8-foot-tall muscled man with gun arms. She was in similar clothing to what she had on yesterday, almost gothic attire with fishnet stockings and a pair of Converse this time. As soon as her creation was set, the man began firing spherical bolts of purple energy at Veronique, who dodged to avoid them and came back with a sea of metal to prevent the next blast. She then tore the roof off the car that Dorian stood on, but Dorian was long gone by that point.
"Come on,"
Grace said, pulling me to the sidewalk. We were in a residential district, only a few blocks from our makeshift home. There must have been people watching, but I was too focused on where Dorian would appear next to notice them.
"Hide,"
Grace hissed. "But..."
"You're injured."
"So are you," I said, moving my fingers through her matted hair. We locked eyes, and I obeyed her immediately.
"I won't let pain come to you,"
she whispered in my head. Dorian reappeared across the street. Veronique hurled as much metal as she could, but Dorian was already gone again. The metal hit a car, broke its windows, blew out its tires, and set off its alarm, adding to the cacophony of noise already blaring around us. We would draw attention soon if we weren't already, but it was impossible for me to act. Grace had control over my mind and my body, and all I could do was watch as the psychic quietly approached the center of the conflict. And by the center of the conflict, I meant the middle of the street, where Veronique stood. Grace was poised, ready to use her powers at a moment's notice, her chest heaving as she sucked in air. Veronique kept turning, looking for Dorian, red energy moving up and down her fingertips. Suddenly, a ghost-like energy creation ballooned into existence and charged at Grace. Taking a play from Veronique's book, Grace used her power to pull the doors off our broken car and fling them at the energy creature. Many explosions erupted, and metal melted with fiery hisses. I was still trying to make sense of it all. With the flick of her wrist, Veronique pulled more paneling from a vehicle on the side of the street and threw it in the direction of the creature. The mixture of iron, aluminum, copper, and steel hit the energy being in the side, pieces of the metal passing through it as they sparked, disintegrated, and exploded. Grace let go of her hold over my psyche as she moved to toss something else at the being. Dorian appeared right next to me, her form fizzling into existence. My reaction was instant. I pulled my fist back and punched her in the face, throwing her sideways as her paintbrush fell to the sidewalk. I hit a girl. Not my style, nothing I'd ever done before, and even though she was trying to kill us, I felt guilty as hell. I'd hit her good, too, knocking her out with my fist, a fist that now pulsed with pain, a fist that had never struck another human being until now. I shook my sore hand out as Veronique walked over to me, a sly grin on her face as if my balls had finally dropped and I could now join the hunt. She knelt and placed her hand on Dorian's forehead, her fingers flashing red as she drained the woman's energy. "I can't believe..."
"You saved us a lot of bullshit,"
Veronique said, looking up at me. She seemed neither impressed nor disappointed.
"Are you okay?"
Grace asked, moving to my side. It's not like me to do something like that. I just reacted. I rubbed my knuckles. She smirked as she read my thoughts.
"Stop panicking. You did what you had to do to help us."
"Don't kill her," I told Veronique.
"Are you suggesting we take her with us?"
She removed her hand from Dorian's forehead. The punk rock diva's skin had already started to dry, and even in the meager light of the street lamps, I could tell that her eyes were beginning to sink into her skull. "We have to try to do something for her. She was only following orders. Maybe we can even find out more if we don't kill her." I exchanged glances with Grace. "But we need to go. Now."
"As you wish,"
Veronique said, and stood up.
"But I'm not going to make the same mistake I did with Grace." I will feed from Dorian every couple of hours until we're ready to sort the situation out.
I bent down, placing my fingers on Dorian's neck to find a pulse. Her skin was hot to the touch, almost as if she was overheating. She's still alive, I thought as my hand instinctively went to her neck port. Let's find a vehicle, I told them. We'll go back to the house, get our things, and get out of here, just in case there are others around as well.
Don't forget her paintbrush,
Grace said as I lifted Dorian into my arms. Not able to get a firm grip on the unconscious woman because her body kept slipping down, I eventually flung her over my shoulder and carried her that way.
Is it a good idea to give that to her? I grunted.
I wasn't going to give it to her. I was going to see what we could discover about it.
Got it. Do that. But let's keep it away from her. I don't know what her powers are without that thing, but I don't want her to wake up and be able to use it.
Chapter 8. Put her in the trunk and drive to Texas. We took the first car we could find, which was some type of Kia four-door sedan with a pretty large trunk. It was a weird off-purple color, maybe light plum, and the interior reeked of coconut lotion. But it would do. I was still slightly delirious, the back of my head still wet with blood. Once we got back to our hideout, Grace checked it out and told me it was just an abrasion. Fuck, was I glad to hear that. As the ladies packed our bags and checked to make sure we hadn't left anything behind, I got cleaned up in the bathroom and applied some rubbing alcohol to the wound. It stung, but it was a good healing sting that woke my ass up. I was still a little jumpy, but I was better than I had been just 15 minutes ago. Back outside, I found the two women moving Dory into the trunk, her hands and feet bound tightly with coat hangers. We wouldn't be able to keep her in there forever, but that was where she was going until we got to Texas. I was just turning back to the house for a final check when I got a message from Luke. Luke, update me. Me. Let's talk about the main character in the story I'm writing. Luke. LOL. Yeah, let's. Me. The MC went to a strip club so the vampiric one could feed, and they were attacked by the teleporter who could conjure kinetic energy. Now, the teleporter is in the trunk of their car. Luke. The MC has someone in the trunk of their car? Hold up. Let me do a quick search to see if that's a great way to suffocate someone or not. Okay, I stand corrected. She won't suffocate in there, but they've started installing glow-in-the-dark candles so a person in a trunk can open it from the inside, FYI. I can't believe we're having this conversation. Me. I can't either, but we're getting out of here. Luke. I'm not going to ask where you're at or where you're going, but don't drive for too long. It's getting late. Me. We won't. Gotta go. Luke. All right. Well, it's off to bed for me and the missus. Good luck.
Your friend seems like a nice guy,
Grace said as she passed by me with the backpack we'd picked up in New Haven over her shoulder. She tossed it in the trunk with Dorian, then we climbed into the vehicle. I started it up and drove away. I was suddenly tired. My body coming down from the adrenaline surge. There was still a voice in the back of my head that was upset with me for punching a woman, but I told that voice to shut the fuck up. There was a good chance Dorian would have killed me if I hadn't reacted the way I did. Like Veronique, she had training, and she was probably used to having the upper hand.
Don't beat yourself up, Ryder Gideon,
said Grace as I pulled onto the highway, immediately zooming up past the speed limit.
You saved us. I'm proud of what you did. You acted quickly, and your action changed the course of that fight. It was amazing.
Hardly, I thought back to her.
We are now in control of Dorian. If you hadn't done that, she may have hurt you or one of us.
You're right. It just goes against my nature.
Everything you've done over the last week goes against your nature.
She had me there. So I kept driving, yawning, blinking away the troubling memories. And once I felt like we were far enough away that I could put the vehicle into auto drive, I did so. The Kia handled pretty well, and I had a brief thought that I had now test-driven more cars than most people would drive in their lifetime. Well, not quite yet, but if we kept switching out cars...
Just relax. Do what Grace said,
a voice whispered in my head. You are ridiculous, I told the shifter, smiling over at her.
It's Ryder Gideon's life,
she said in Ira Glass's voice.
Each week, we take a look at Gideon Caldwell and the trouble he's gotten himself into. This week, Dorian and her magic paintbrush. Stay tuned. It's going to be a hell of a story.
Do one of the property guys,
Veronique suddenly requested from the back seat. Grace morphed into the property guy, a fucking tool if I'd ever seen one, and gave a quick spiel about the house's foundation and how they were planning to gut it, much to Veronique's delight. As they continued to roleplay, I found myself more and more interested in the type of humor they liked. I didn't think they'd enjoy the typical comedy we had nowadays, which seemed to be mostly about dicks, balls, sex, getting drunk, wives, and kids. The Cherry Blossom girls enjoyed a simpler humor, and Grace's ability only made this work even better. There was almost something childlike in the way Veronique would request for her to morph into and speak as someone else. But that wasn't the only thing on my mind as I drove, or as the Kia drove itself. I was also thinking about the woman in the trunk. Can she be turned? And what would happen if she woke up in the trunk? Is this really a smart idea? I was definitely interested to see what was on her drive. That would be the first thing I did when we arrived at our next destination. I figured we could stay in a hotel now because we didn't have to worry about her premonition ability affecting us, especially if we kept her passed out. At some point in our journey, I began wondering more about her strategy and if it had been part of her plan to be captured by us. It was a long shot, and there was no way she could have known I would have reacted the way I did, but Grace and Veronique may have been able to take her. Grace was much stronger than she let on, and while she didn't have as much sway over superpowered individuals, she could have used her ability to broadside Dorian with something while Veronique distracted her from the front. I need to know more about Dorian's abilities. That much was clear. Everything else was speculation. But as soon as we got to our next destination, I was plugging in. I didn't care if I had to brew coffee all night. I was going to discover something. We would be in Texas within the hour. I searched on my smartphone and found several hotels in Longview. I located the most expensive one and put a flag on it. Might as well do this shit in style. After all, as John Milton said in Paradise Lost, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. Chapter 9. Playing with Stats. If you guessed the Marriott again, you would be correct. Everything is bigger in Texas, or so I'd heard, and even though I'd only been driving in the state for an hour, I could confirm this was definitely a thing, including the hotel. What they don't tell you about Texas is that everything is horizontally, not always vertically, bigger, so everything is essentially fatter. A grower, not a shower. Actually, that little line my ex used to describe my penis didn't really apply. Yet, it was the first thing that came to my mind as I pulled our borrowed Kia into the Marriott's parking lot shortly before midnight.
What's the plan?
Grace asked as we got out. Of course, she knew the plan. The plan when checking into hotels hadn't changed. We were Edward and Jill King, CBG Incorporated, and we already had a reservation that was paid for by our company.
Should we get two rooms?
Veronique asked as I popped the trunk. We'll get whatever suite they have. Hopefully it's got two separate rooms so we can keep Dorian somewhere else. Veronique stepped over to the trunk.
Let's just see what they have, and don't worry about Dorian. I'll take care of her this time.
Nope. Don't like the way she said that, I thought as we grabbed our bags and walked into the hotel. Rather than have me carry her, Veronique used her metal-wielding ability to drag Dorian along behind us, using the metal on the teleporter's jacket, belt, and jean shorts. She dragged her roughly, too, Dorian's heels scraping against the pavement as she pulled her over the curb. I had forgotten I was wearing body armor, and after taking a few steps toward the hotel's entrance, I definitely felt it. The armor was heavy, starting to chafe some, but I'd need to keep it on for a little longer. The sliding glass door opened, and we were greeted by a large painting of a cowboy riding a bull, which was pinned to the wall above a stuffed deer. We moved around this grand display of southern power, still towing Dorian behind us. Due to the late hour, the lobby was empty. The receptionist, an Indian man who reeked of cigarettes and looked like he hadn't slept in weeks, was looking at his phone when we came in. The moment Grace saw him, he belonged to her. He began typing away on his computer, his eyes suddenly white.
Okay, room 206,
he said in accented English as he gave me the key card.
Checkout time is at 11.
I hesitated for a moment. It was already late, and I really needed to do some work on my manuscript, especially before we got into whatever we would get into in Austin. David Butler could wait a day. Actually, we'll be here until the day after tomorrow, so two nights.
Ah, I see that here,
the man said as he wagged his head left and right.
Okay, enjoy your stay in Longview. Continental breakfast is from 7 to 10.
Still under Grace's spell, the man merely looked at Dorian as she was dragged away. I need to finish up this manuscript. I'm sorry the hotel isn't more interesting. I wish there was more to do around here.
That's okay,
said Veronique.
We can watch our shows.
I keyed everyone into the room, and Grace took over with Dorian's body. Her eyes flashing white, she lifted the woman into the air and placed her body on the sofa chair near the window. No balconies here. This place was way too corporate to have a balcony with a view, and besides that, there really wasn't a view anyway, as the hotel overlooked a four-way intersection. The clothes hangers burst out of the closet, startling me. They flew toward Dorian, and as the hangers that had already chained her wrists unwrapped, the new ones strapped her arms and legs tightly to the chair. Don't kill her, I reminded Veronique as I set my bags down.
As you wish.
It was a spacious suite, with two large rooms and a rectangular bathroom joining them. I opened my duffel bag and got the mini USB cable out. Grace took my bag to the second room, leaving Veronique and me in the first.
I guess that's where you're sleeping,
Veronique said under her breath. Rather than answer, and really, what was I supposed to say, I ignored her. I had no idea how this would play out when I plugged into Dorian's neck, and as I approached her, Veronique skidded across the bed and stopped me. She pressed her palm against my chest, fingers glowing red. Hey! I started to protest, but she turned away from me to Dorian and placed her hand on the teleporting artist's head, draining even more of her energy. Not too much, I whispered.
We can't have her waking up,
Veronique said as she topped off. Her skin more radiant than it had been a couple of hours ago, Veronique lay down on the bed and found the Home Improvement channel on the TV. Grace returned from our room in my clothes, a statement if there ever was one, and sat on the bed next to Veronique.
Don't worry, we'll get along. And if you have tension, release it.
I gave Grace a funny look.
Your idea of a relationship is different than ours, Ryder Gideon.
Okay, I said, just to clear Grace's voice out of my head. I plugged into Dorian's neck, and a prompt asked me for the password.
1QAZ2WSX3EFV4321QWEASD.
Thanks, I thought to Grace. The password worked. I logged in easily and was presented with a shadow box. Not a lot here, nothing like what was on Grace and Veronique's systems, which gave more credibility to Dr. Ken Kim's statement that he had put that stuff on them to be discovered. Of course, this begged a whole series of other questions, like, how did he know someone would try to access them unless he was planning to free them? After a little poking around, I found Dorian Gray's base stats. Build, 7.543. Base height, 170 centimeters. Base weight, 49 kilos. Strength, 2. Intelligence, 6. Constitution, 7. Wisdom, 3. Dexterity, 6. Charisma, 8. Well, at least she had charisma and constitution going for her, which surely counted for something. I cycled back to a different menu to find out more about her abilities. As it turned out, most of her energy abilities were set at low levels. I kept them that way for now. Main, ergokinesis. Overcharge, 2. Charge capacity, 4. Charge integrity, 3. I scrolled to the space below the dials to get an explanation of what these three things were, even though they were pretty self-explanatory. From what I could decipher, setting overcharge as low as possible kept her creations from becoming volatile too early through the overuse of her abilities. Charge capacity referred to the size of the items she could create out of thin air. Increasing this would allow her to charge even larger things. Like Veronique said, Dorian's charge ability came from her saliva and other bodily fluids. It was a weird ability. But then again, so were Toad's abilities, as well as an assortment of other mutants from my favorite reference. You'd think I'd have a Professor X quote in Mutants in the Making by now. Not a bad idea, actually. Charge integrity dealt with how long the charged item she created actually lasted. By increasing this, it would take longer for her creations to fizzle out. I backed out of that folder and went to her main second folder, which spawned another shadow box of dials. Main second, teleportation. Telesphere radius, 2. Conscious spatial awareness, 10. Recharge speed, 6. Restoration speed, 6. There were a few other options, but akin to when I saw Veronique's abilities, they were blurred out. I briefly messed with the dials and found that adjusting the telesphere radius up reduced the recharge speed and restoration speed. So the larger the objects she teleports, the slower they were teleported and restored. I wasn't able to adjust the conscious spatial awareness dial, and once I checked the description, I realized why. This prevented Dorian from teleporting directly into an object and killing herself. Useful. But how does the teleportation work? I started checking folders on her drive for answers. I wasn't going to be able to parse through an explanation on quantum teleportation, but at least I could get a sense of what was going on. The only problem was, her drive was pretty much empty. No videos, no PDFs of various facilities, no extra notes about her abilities or the project, no nothing. I had the notion of going back into her teleportation ability and adjusting the speed down, but I figured that even being able to teleport at a speed of 1 would allow her to move away faster than we could do anything about. And what if she was teleporting when Veronique touched her and both of them disappeared? That would be monstrously shitty. So I left things as they were. It was late. I was no longer drunk, but I was a little loopy, and I really wanted to get some work done the following day. Even after all this, I was planning to write the next day. You see what I mean when I say writing is a sickness? Rather than debate the voice in my head or scold myself for not hitting my word count or get out my new laptop and check my book stats, I decided to wash my sins away. I took a brief shower, washed my writer bits, and thankfully no one joined me this time. Once I toweled off and was feeling fresh to death, I popped my head into the first room, announcing to the women that I was going to sleep. My phone buzzed just as I got into the bed. Where the fuck are you? I'm giving you some real data here and you still aren't here? Ever heard of an airplane? Don't be a dumbass. This is happening now, happening fast, and they may start moving people if you don't hurry up and get here. So whatever you're doing, stop doing it. Get your ass to Texas. David Butler. Dumbass? Is this dude drunk? I wasn't about to call off the trip just yet, especially due to the fact that Grace had seen Mother in the picture taken in Austin. But I was glad to be visiting David with Veronique and Grace at my side. The guy may or may not be stable, and if he wasn't stable, it'd be helpful to have some muscle around. Speaking of muscle, I was just about to nod off when Grace entered the room and flicked off all but one of the lights. Chapter 10. Pornographic Insight.
Come to the edge of the bed,
Grace said as she changed her form. The change started from the center point of her body and worked its way out, a ripple of color and skin and clothing immediately settling into place. She now wore a neon yellow fishnet halter top with matching bikini bottoms and a pair of high heels, also yellow, with 6-inch stilettos. The strip club, I thought as she approached the bed, hips swaying. No noobs in the room this time. I moved to the corner of the bed and sat up, erect in two ways. Once she reached me, Grace swept her long hair over her shoulder and turned her back to me. She sat down on my lap, just as she had seen the strippers do in the club, and as she gyrated her hips, my mood changed from sleepy and concerned to happy-go-lucky, or better, happy to get lucky.
How do you want me?
She asked, as her skin began to darken. Her hair thickened, braids formed, and her hip size increased. A black woman now, Grace twisted around and kissed me. As we kissed, her form began to morph again, this time changing into a light-skinned Asian woman with bleached blonde hair and a Monroe piercing. She stood, bent before me so I could get a good peachy view, and touched the tops of her high heels, swaying her ass back and forth. The color of her thong and neon halter top went from yellow to purple as her skin turned caramel, her hair long and flowing, her features that of someone from Latin America. She turned to face me, her hands covering her nipples as she moved her shoulders up and down. I licked my lips, thanked Jeebus, promised to curb my wicked ways, and finally reached my hand out. She slapped it away.
No touching,
she purred as she turned her back to me and lowered herself onto my lap again. She resumed gyrating her hips against me.
They'll kick you out of the club.
Yes, ma'am. It was amazing how much the promise of sex shattered the millions of thoughts racing through my skull. That's one of the things I like most about getting lucky. It's an ultimate form of escapism requiring physical effort that's rewarded with a nearly indescribable but amazing full-body sensation. And sure, better writers than I had put in their due diligence to describe exactly what an orgasm feels like. But if someone who had never experienced an orgasm read about it, could they really understand what it felt like? Could you say that having an orgasm was like having the rug swept out from beneath you and falling into a galaxy of vibrating dandelions?
Quiet, Rider Gideon,
Grace said as she thrust against me even harder.
And you aren't tipping me.
I glanced at the duffel bag that contained all the cash and then back to her. Are you serious? She raised an eyebrow at me, and as she did, her facial features began to morph, settling on a hot Latina with braided hair. She bent forward, kissed me, and bit at my lip as she pulled away. I cleared my throat. If you want to get tipped, you're going to have to get off my lap so I can get the cash.
Stay where you are.
She stood and went to retrieve the cash for me, making sure I was thoroughly focused on her movement as she left the bedside. She returned with the duffel and dropped it at my feet. I quickly reached down and got a stack of hundreds. Grace morphed back into her base form, her long blonde hair, blue eyes, soft skin, incredible body.
What do you want me to wear?
Is nothing an answer?
You can't tip me if I don't wear anything.
She stuck with the outfit she'd been wearing the entire time, a fishnet halter top and a thong. She turned, looked at me over her shoulder, and as she did, I put my first hundred in the side string of her thong.
Is this a good fantasy?
She asked, as she raised her hands and placed them behind her head. Sure, it's, unexpected. Her form rippled slightly, her back still facing me, which I took to mean that she'd changed her appearance but hadn't adjusted her body size very much.
Your mind is too busy,
she said, looking over her shoulder again before turning to face me once more. I silently toasted HBO as she climbed back into my lap, her knees at my sides. She thrust her hips forward, grinding against my hard-on.
You like it?
She asked. Daenerys Targaryen, or better, the actress who played her, bent forward to kiss me. She pressed away just as her form morphed into a sexy cosplay version of Mystique.
This is who I'm like, correct?
She asked, her skin blue and covered with ridges, her orange hair slicked back. No, I mean, yeah, but different. Rather than fumble on any more words, I slipped another $100 bill into her panties. As she changed back into her base form, she started unzipping my pants.
Ooh, I know who I can be,
she said, as her features morphed into Natalie Johansson's.
Can I?
She asked as she got to her knees. Please do. A couple things need to be addressed. No, I never thought my writing career would involve penning a passage about a blowjob. I also was unaware, and quickly became hyper-aware, of just how much porn I had consumed and how it affected Grace's understanding of sex. She'd only seen sex in movies before meeting me, and then she was able to tap into my mind and its deep vault of porn. By 2030, watching porn had become as American as apple pie, if apple pie was something consumed in secret, more so by men than women, but still a good majority of the population. You could blame a change in morality over the last 30 years, or you could blame the real culprit, the internet.